Hello and welcome to the Emma Stoners. This is the podcast where we're talking about all things Emma Stone. We're going for an entire filmography, ranking and reviewing as we go along. I'm Cameron, who is currently, I think, dying. If I do look like a sweaty mess, I've just had the third coronavirus dead behind vaccine. The eyes, man. I'm running out of time before bloody London, so we have to get this done now, obviously. So otherwise I would have been like, let's just do it in a couple of days time, but there's no couple of days time. There is now or never. So
are you sure it's not just because of the film we're talking about?
I think so. I think I'm sweating because of all the controversy that could come from this. But you're Emma Stone's number one fan always. How are you doing this fine evening?
I'm doing good, yeah. I mean, I am also dead inside, but not because I've been boosted. I am dead inside because of this movie.
Yes, yeah. We should probably just jump straight into it because I think we're going to... we are going to be joined by a guest later on in the show. Laura Poitier is going to come and talk about Birdman or The Unexpected Virtue of Ignorance, which is... we filmed that before and it is a very long discussion and a very... good discussion. I think we had a great time with that one.
I think we did have a good time. Some controversial opinions.
Lots of controversy. This is going to be a controversial show, so... So we're talking about the Magic in the Moonlight, which is directed by Woody Allen and stars people like Colin Firth. And that's about it. and also stars... Emma Stone, of course. Awais, could you tell me about this Woody Allen movie, please?
Yeah, so Colin Firth basically plays Stanley Crawford, who's a magician. He's basically dedicated his entire life to revealing fraudulent spiritualists. And then there is a celebrated spiritualist, I managed to say it that time, Sophie Baker, who's played by Emma Stone. She's like quickly on the rise. So he... decides to set out to France to basically expose her. But the more time he spends with her, the more he realizes maybe magic is real and maybe love is real.
Wow, how cute.
Can I say with a straight face?
How amazing. How very Woody Allen of you.
Yes.
It's I watched this in my bed at like... not even that late in the night, but I watched this in bed just in prep for this and... it was a challenge to keep my eyes open. You know, it was an absolute challenge. It is so dull. It is unbelievable.
Yeah.
I don't think Woody Allen has made a good movie since like the 70s or whenever he was going. Like, I don't think I've seen a lot of his modern stuff, like more so.
See, I was about to ask, how familiar are you with Woody Allen stuff?
I am familiar-ish. I've seen some of his older stuff. I've seen a lot of his modern stuff just from going to the cinema. Like they were still getting shown like Cineworld and stuff until quite recently. You know what I mean? Like that Kate Winslet one was still like the Fairground one was like the last one I saw in the cinemas. And then obviously I had Rainy Day in New York, which I'd imagine you're a massive fan of.
Now, why would you say such a thing?
I'm not so well versed in him, but I'm aware of how crap his modern movies are, and in comparison to some of the older stuff I have seen, so I know this is not good for him. But what about yourself?
I've not seen a lot of his older stuff. Like, I've not seen the stuff that people, you know, recognize Woody Allen for. I've seen Midnight in Paris, which I really enjoyed, and I've seen A Rainy Day in New York, which I thought was fine. I know his modern films have this rep of just... because he does, you know, he just does like a film a year, I think. And he just doesn't really... it seems like there's not any focus on quality.
No.
It seems like he's doing quantity rather than quality. And I think this film kind of shows. From what I've heard, you know, there are a couple of gems in his new films. Apparently Blue Jasmine. I mean, that was sort of a big one on the award circuit. And that came out before Magic in the Moonlight. But I think... that there's just no life to this. And even from a directorial standpoint, you'd think, you know, from a name like Allen, it would have a little bit more visual pizzazz to it, but it's just so bland. Like, the whole film is just boring, I think. It's just dull.
Yeah, no, I agree. And, you know, obviously, a Woody Allen movie and all that.
Obviously, now controversial, yeah.
Very well, even then, at the time,
yeah,
still controversial, you know what I mean? And yeah. That's the crazy thing. Like, I think Emma Stone, like, I don't think she's publicly supported him, but she's not publicly, like, bashed him either. It. Like,
yeah.
It's very strange where...
Has she been asked about it, though? Do we know?
Yeah, there's some articles. I'm looking here, some interviews she's done with stuff like Guardian things.
Yeah.
But there's not an awful lot where it's, like... She's like saying, like, she's not one that has spoken up since, I don't think, which is
yeah,
maybe disappointing, maybe not. It depends. It's such a strange circumstance, I guess. You know, it's one of those ones where it's like, why work with him, but why not? Because he is such a massive name. You can see why these actors will go towards Woody Allen, because he is, I mean, even then, but the scripts are so fucking dull as well.
I mean, like, I remember that's why Selena Gomez, worked with him. Obviously, like, I'm a big sort of Selena Gomez fan. I remember seeing a rainy day in New York and sort of wondering about that, because, you know, Timothy came out against him and stuff, and Selena didn't publicly speak up about it, but her mum, who sort of acts as her publicist sometimes, did. And she was basically just like, at the time, for an actress like Selena Gomez, who was trying to sort of do more interesting projects, the sort of appeal of working with a name like Woody Allen, you know, it's nothing she's going to apologize for. And then, you know, you have people like Timothy, and I don't know whether that's more authentic than people like Timothy Chalamet then being like, I can't believe I worked with him. But you worked with him in 2008, with him in 2019, 18, when he's at the sort of height of his controversy. You worked with him for a reason, you know.
Exactly.
Just say that, you know, because there's also a thing to be said about young actors and stuff working with these big name directors, you know, to get themselves out there. And, like, I imagine this, you know, was probably a big role for Emma Stone as well. You know, you're working with Colin Firth and stuff, and it's such a fascinating topic. I think
it's one of those ones where it's like, I mean, she's only done a handful of serious stuff before this, mm-hmm. as well, you know, and she did like this and Birdman back to back, and that is saying something. I mean, that's like two very mature and modern movies, I guess, for her. Mature, like, not modern, but, you know, I mean, mature, and my brain's gone fucking dead. Mature and like older movies, like, I don't know, like, they're more
serious, for sure. Yeah.
Serious, that's the word I'm looking for. Yeah, they're more serious movies, which is nice. And I think she, you know, coming off the back of Spider-Man and the Croods and stuff like that, I mean,
she was trying to reinvent herself, and exactly. I think this plays into that.
Exactly. And you're going into stuff like now where we're going to hit La La Land soon. Stay tuned, by the way, for a cool special. We're going to be doing a lot of a standalone episode for La La Land. And, you know, you do La La Land, you've got stuff like The Favourite, you got all that stuff. And I think they are similar in some respects. That's the kind of path she's starting on now, at least in this time, the time in her career we're at, where I think it'll be really interesting to see where things go from there.
Mm-hmm. And I mean, she is good in the role, you know.
Yeah.
She has a big role in it. You know, she's one of the main characters. And she is good. I think she has good chemistry with Colin Firth as well. They're just not given loads to do.
No. The age gap's weird as well. She plays it really young. Like, she plays like she is, like, really young. And Colin Firth looks about 55 in this, and she looks about 12. So. I mean, there's parallels. Woody Allen, obviously, you can say there's always parallels between his work and his real life, by the sounds of things.
Yes. Yes. I mean, it does. It does seem like that. I mean, that's obviously the controversial part. Also, it's supposed to be a comedy. It's not very funny.
Is it? I didn't laugh.
It's not funny.
It's actually not funny. Actively not funny. I assume this boring. Was more serious than most things. It is just fucking boring. Period piece boring nonsense. Now that you've said that, that worries me more than before, because now I'm like, oh fuck. Is this like, was I supposed to have laughed? Has this film worked even less for me? So I don't know. Oh boy.
I don't know. I mean, I think, you know, Firth's character is obviously very boorish and, you know, monotonous, but I think it's trying to go for a quirky indie humor sometimes. Maybe. Doesn't really work. I don't know what tone it's trying to strive for. It doesn't really work in any regard.
No, not at all.
And I like magic movies.
You're the big fan of Now You See Me. Big fan. They're the same vein. Obviously.
It's cinema. You know, Now You See Me is cinema.
Yeah.
That scene where, you know, they're doing the card trick and, oh, masterpiece.
Never saw the sequel. Need to see the sequel. Now You See
Me.
You
know, they missed the trick not calling it Now You Don't.
Yeah, I know. You know, that's one of the most depressing things I think I've ever had to deal with in my life, I think. I've never fully recovered from that. And that is just, I don't know what I'll do now. Oh, boy, oh, boy. I think we're going to probably have to wrap it up, see where we're going.
There's not much more to say. But
there's not much more to say. I mean, do you want to give me a score?
Guess.
Yeah.
Can you guess?
Whoa, you're going one. You're going two, sorry. I'm going one. That is, yes.
For the podcast listeners, by the way,
I held up one finger and he held up two fingers. That's why there was a weird period of silence there.
I forget now that we are on Spotify still, because we record it for YouTube primarily. I think I say this all the time. I think Emma Stone keeps her films afloat. And I think there are some scenes that work. You know, there are some scenes where I'm like, if they sort of, it's the same with any Woody Allen film. There are some scenes where, like, the writing does seem like it's going somewhere. Yeah. And I'm like, I really like it. I get into it, and then it just stops. And I'm like, right. I would say two. It's not a good movie by any means.
I'm going actively bad. So I'm going to go one. It's really just dull. It really did nothing for me. I didn't laugh because apparently it's supposed to be a comedy, and I did not know that until now.
In that perspective, it fails on all cylinders.
Emma is okay in this. I have nothing else to add. Really, it's just not one for me. I guess it's not.
They're just not given anything to do.
No.
Because, like, the concept of Colin Firth and Emma Stone together in a film is really good in theory, but not in this vein. Give them a father-daughter dynamic.
Yes, that's what it kind of... Do you know, it's funny, though, because that's what it kind of feels like. Like, it feels like a father-daughter thing. And, like, it feels like it'd be better if it was a father-daughter thing, but no. We're here for a romance. And that's the way the cookie crumbles. Next up, we're talking about Birdman, which is directed by Alejandro Iñárritu. It was stars Michael Keaton, Edward Norton, Zach Galifianakis, and of course Emma Stone. Awais. We're joined by a guest this time round. Who's here? Because I can't see because Zoom is broken.
We're once again joined by the fabulous Laura Potier, who's here to talk about Birdman with us.
So Awais, what happens in this movie, though?
So it's like a very meta movie. Basically, Michael Keaton plays Regan Thompson, who's like, he was a famous comic book movie actor. He played Birdman, but now he sort of finds his life haunted by that role, and he wants to sort of reinvent himself. So he decides to write, direct, and star in a Broadway play, but it doesn't go very well. And that's pretty much the gist of it. You've got, like, everyone sort of plays themselves. Michael Keaton sort of plays himself. Birdman is obviously Batman. Edward Norton plays a version of himself, apparently, because I think he's supposed to be difficult to work with. Does that mean Emma Stone plays a version of herself? Like a hardcore stoner girl?
I don't think so. Maybe.
She doesn't strike me as a ex-junkie, to be honest.
Yeah. No. But yeah, this film won so many awards, and it was held in such high regard. I know we all mentioned it before, and I think last time we had all seen it, neither of us, no one liked it. So I'm very curious, what did people think of it this
time? Yeah, Laura, you said that you did not like this film at all. So I'm very curious to see what you thought on a rewatch.
Yeah, so I think I appreciate what it's trying to do a bit more this time, but I still don't like it. I still don't. I think it's...
Why?
To be fair, because, first of all, it's like a very hard film to like because it's trying so hard and you're just like, okay. but also because, and this could be, to be fair, it's a dual thing. So first of all, rewatching it after all these years, the whole conversation around what is cinema is so overdone that anytime it's brought up, I just can't help but like roll my eyes. I'm just like, huh. And I get it. Like they did it first, but watching it now, you know, it doesn't hold up as much. And secondly, it's because it tries to be really daring with the meta commentary and like bringing up these difficult questions around like everything from what is art to like celebrity culture to even like an individual's like ego. But then it gives these really conventional, really disappointing answers. And you're just kind of like, right, well, I could have come up with that myself. Like, what was the point of this whole gimmick?
Yeah, that makes sense.
But that's just one girl's opinion.
To me, it seems like the Martin Scorsese comments, but just years ahead of the Martin Scorsese comments. Like, that's what I thought of yesterday. I was like, everyone's getting so annoyed by the sort of Martin Scorsese comments, and recently the Denis Villeneuve comments. But Iñárritu did it first in 2014. Like, this, he made an entire film about hating superhero movies and Marvel and stuff. And it's funny you say that you think it holds up less now. I was saying to Cameron last night, I find it more interesting now because Michael Keaton's returned to superhero films and he's returned to the role of Batman as well. And I just find that so fascinating. Like, I wonder why. Is it because he feels he can't escape that if this film is so sort of based on his own experience?
Batman's been following around. Batman's been following him around for the last, like, God knows how long. Literally in the back of his head, flying overhead of him, of course. That's how it works. And the film's in to go by.
Kind of wonder why they didn't do the whole Batman rather than Birdman. Probably because of, like, IPs and stuff. Yeah. But could have been funny. Not that they tried very hard to... Yeah.
But it's just, I just find it so interesting. Like, everything it has to say on superhero movies, especially now because they're even bigger than they were in 2014, I find. But I don't know, I'm personally getting a bit bored of superhero movies after Endgame. I think Marvel
are
is just kind
fuck,
of
fuck man you you
no
sir
look
come
okay,
on
aside from all
behind,
the Spider-Man
maybe in
chat,
public behind closed doors you're very much like, oh, I can't wait. So
aside from No Way Home, which I'm like just next level excited for, like Marvel in particular, like Black Widow and Shang-Chi and stuff, just after Endgame, I think because Endgame was such a good sort of end for it all, I'm like, do we need to keep going? But then I really like the TV shows and I'm excited for Hawkeye and stuff, and so I don't know. What did you think, Cameron?
Of Marvel or the movie? No, I am. As you can see, I'm probably not the best one to talk about the whole like superhero movies dying and blockbusters and things, as my surroundings kind of put me down in this conversation to the level of I'm a fanboy. It was an interesting film. I still admire the one-shot stuff of it. Like, yeah, that was like a big deal at the time. I still thought that was really cool. As for what it says, I am a stupid person and therefore I don't have much to say because I don't feel very pretentious enough to kind of go like, oh, but art is this? And I'm just not there, you know what I mean? That's not the kind of person I am. But I don't know how you guys felt about like the whole technical aspect, like the how seamless the one shot stuff is and, you know, like stuff like that. But I thought that was really pretty cool. I think it won the Academy Award, didn't it? For cinematography in the end.
It did win it for. It won four Oscars, I believe.
Anyone know what for?
Could not tell.
It won Best Picture. It won directing, it won screenplay, and it won cinematography.
It won screenplay.
Mm-hmm. It won screenplay. Emma Stone was nominated for this as well.
Really?
Fair enough.
Yeah, she was nominated in Best Actress in a Supporting Role.
How do we feel about Emma Stone in this one? In terms of performance, I think this is probably one of her first.
Laura giving some eyes there.
Her first proper serious role, I guess, like the first like proper Academy Award.
I think so. Yeah.
One. Yeah.
Yeah, maybe.
I want to know Laura's thoughts.
What was with the eyes?
She rolled her eyes. Yeah.
This is an Emma Stone podcast. We have to bring her up at some point.
No, like, I love Emma Stone, and I think she's a wonderful actress, and I think she gives this her best, but I think it's just, like, a very thinly written role. Like, she's just there to perform a function and, like, either be a source of guilt to Michael Keaton's character or be there to, like, highlight the hypocrisy of, oh, my God, his name.
Edward Norton's
character, thank you. Or be there to like offer support when her dad needs it. And I feel like apart from that, there's no substance to her. Like she is purely there to push others' arcs forward. And yeah, it's not Emma Stone's fault. I just don't find the character all that interesting. But given what she was handed, she did well, is all I think. The acting's good. I think she's very credible in it, and yeah, she did her job as an actress. I blame the script.
Yeah, I would agree with that. I think she's fantastic. I think in terms of like her performance, but she always is. Like there's that scene where it's like her ranting to Michael Keaton about how he's not relevant anymore, and it's like just the camera's focus on her for a solid few minutes, and she's just amazing. But I noticed she didn't have much to do. But then I don't think any of the side characters really do. I can't think of any side character that's really fleshed out. And I don't know if that's a purposeful thing or not. Because I was sort of reading up on the film and I guess the whole thing, because there's many ways to interpret it. And one of the interpretations was that the whole thing takes place from like Riggins' point of view. It's sort of his idea of like his reality, which is obviously all about him.
Mm-hmm.
And so maybe that would make sense, but she played a very generic daughter role. I think it reminded me of Steve Jobs, and I love that film, but like what I dislike about that is the sort of daughter role is just there as an anchor to the sort of the main character, as a sort of like emotional anchor, but they don't really ever do much with that. And I got the same vibe from Emma Stone's character in this.
Mm-hmm.
I was looking at Common Sense Media, but unfortunately I think everyone seems to not
love it.
Subjected their kids to this, which is unfortunate because I was really hoping there'd be like Michael Keaton rocks around in his underpants and it's just ridiculous. This is an 18 plus, but I guess everyone knew the audience for this.
I'm surprised that people didn't walk into this thinking it was a superhero film and were just like disappointed, you know, because I thought that's, you know, because I work at a cinema and people just come and they're just like, oh, what's on? And you just, and they sort of judge films by titles. And I can imagine that in 2014, people would be like, oh, what's on? And people would say Birdman. And they'd be like, yeah, let's go see a superhero film.
Maybe that's why.
Super disappointed.
Yeah, maybe that's why there was the second part to the title. Because, yeah, Birdman sounds like a superhero film. But then you add, and the unexpected virtue of ignorance. And you're like, art house.
But does anyone ever read that full title out?
Yeah, that's way too much.
That's too much.
I can't remember the marketing, so I can't remember how much that featured.
Yeah.
I don't think I was conscious at the time this film came out, to be fair. It's 2014, but I don't think I actually fully became a human until I was like 17 years old. So it's
like... Well, that's what I'm saying. I clearly didn't understand it the first time. So I didn't like it the first time. But I really, really sort of... I like it now. I personally feel it's still relevant in what it has to say. But I clearly just didn't have any taste in 2014.
But like, you would have been what, like 12?
Like, I can't even... Yeah, 15. 16,
oh, you watched 16, it late 16. On, didn't you? You didn't watch it released, did you? You watched it quite late on.
No, I watched it. I watched it in on a torrent. I remember. Right. I would have been 16 in 2014.
Oh yeah, 2014. Yeah, I feel like I thought it was 2012. But yeah.
Nah. Yeah. Well, see, I thought that as well. See, I feel like 16-year-old me though was like trying to be edgy with film taste, but realistically didn't like those movies. Like, I remember seeing The Revenant and like being like, yeah, The Revenant was cool, but realistically hating The Revenant because I found it so boring. I need to rewatch it. But
I was like, yeah. I love The Revenant. The Revenant's the best thing ever. And I was just like, okay, apart from the fact he's blowing like frost, like condensation onto the camera, I'm like, that is it. I don't know. I don't like this film at all.
Inherent Vice was another one. I remember seeing it and not understanding it because that film's just, from what I remember, just an absolute trip. And just like, I remember going into school and being like, I watched Inherent Vice. Yeah, it was cool. It was good. And like trying to be all super edgy about it, but realistically, I did not like that film. I don't even think I finished it.
You would have been a riot to know in high school.
Oh my God. And that was the same with Birdman. I feel like I probably pretended to like Birdman in 2014.
It's really deep, you know.
Like. Yeah. Yeah. It's very much we all have a mutual friend. We know who I'm talking about. It's a kind of film he loved in 2014.
This is like the people that are going around saying they love Green Knight will be the people that loved Birdman back in the day, is what I think you're trying to say. You know, the people that thought Green Knight is the best thing since sliced bread. That's people that like Birdman. So,
yes,
you know,
that's true.
Like, it's so deep. That's a good comparison. So interesting.
I mean, yeah. I do like Birdman now. So I don't know what that says about me now, but...
I don't know. I thought it was... I'm like middle of the road now. I don't know what I think. I'm just sort of like, that was I enjoyed it, but I didn't... I don't know. I understood it, but I was also just like, I don't know. Like, it's just fine. Yeah.
That's fair.
Ratings for you lot though, what start with Oasis. What are you thinking for a rating?
I'm gonna go four.
All right.
I would go five because I'm like, realistically, what would I change? No, I'm gonna go five.
Oh wow.
I hate to be that guy. I'm gonna go five stars.
Wow.
It was a film that got me thinking last night. I think it's long. It's definitely a bit long, but like, as I was watching it, I kept sort of pausing it to think about it and to sort of sort of just have a conversation with myself about sort of its relevance today and stuff. And I find it has very interesting things to say, very pretentious things to say, but I always admire films that have something to say. And I love the whole one-shot aspect. Like, I think it's very technically insane, and like the acting and everything, the cinematography is all, So I'm gonna go for a five. I'm gonna do it.
And just a quick note on the whole one shot thing. I was just reading there that it only has 16 visible cuts, and because of how long the actual takes are, it only took 2 weeks to edit. That was it.
Damn.
Yeah.
Those cuts are well hidden, to be fair.
Yeah, well, there's 16 visible cuts. I don't know how many cuts there are from like different shots and things, but according to, obviously, because it's got the meteor stuff at the beginning and the end and stuff like that. But Laura, what are you thinking for a rating?
Are we doing half stars? Can I be cheeky?
Yes.
Yeah, go for it.
Go for it.
Do the first half star of the podcast.
I'm going to be so annoying and give it 2.5.
So like properly middle of the road.
Properly middle of the road, because I didn't like it, but I can appreciate a lot of the aspects of it.
That's fair.
Aspects, not it as a whole. I've got actual qualms with a few things. But let's put it this way. I think it's worth a watch for anyone. And whether or not you enjoy it, I do think you'll get something from it. And everything from like the acting to the very sleek cinematography and everything. Like, yeah, well done, you know.
Yeah,
plus, he made big bank, so he got what he wanted. Whether that's a meta commentary on the film itself.
It's all getting really meta in here. I'm going to go free, I think, just because. Ooh. Yeah, that's my middle of the road, I guess, because we don't do half stars on this podcast. Thank you very much. I enjoy it. And I think maybe another, if I watched it again in like a year, maybe I'd like, I think, because I watched it like, I had to split it in two. So I watched the last like hour of it this morning as well. So I watched like an hour of it last night and then an hour of it this morning. And I was proper like rushing to watch it because, so I left it too late and it was my own fault. That's all I'll say in terms of my enjoyment. But yeah.
I have a quick question for you guys. What are your thoughts on the whole superhero discourse? Like the Scorsese comments, the Villeneuve comments. And I guess what this... I don't feel like this is attacking superhero films. It's just saying we need them in a way. But what is everyone's thoughts on that?
Again,
deep question.
I'm gonna be such an annoying middle of the road person where I'm like, yeah, I recognize that like Marvel has a formula and it's got mad money, and I'm like mad at Disney for being such a monopolizing force in entertainment. But at the same time, like, I do think some of the films are genuinely good. I do think, especially now, they're doing good work in terms of like bringing really high profile films and like using that to highlight representation issues. It's very late on in the game. That could have been happening like 10 years ago, but better now than never. And I do think like some of it's genuinely good, and I like, so far, like the Disney Plus shows have been like genuinely good. Yeah. Like WandaVision was
amazing.
I resent how much money Disney have, but I personally really enjoy Marvel films.
Yeah,
so.
I think I'm the same.
Yeah,
it's difficult because when I hear all these comments, I'm always like, I feel like they kind of wrote them off in like 2012 when they were still like really quite boring movies. If that makes sense. Yeah. Whereas I feel like it has changed quite a fair bit in the last like 4 years or so in terms of like actual type of superhero movies. I think there are, like, if Marvel movies were the same as they were, like all the origin stories of like 2008 to like 2013, I get it, but I don't know, I feel like it's a lot of diversity now, you know what I mean? You can't tell me like Spider-Verse is like causing issues. You can't tell me like, you know what I mean, like it's
Spider-Verse, so good.
So every good superhero film is so different nowadays, I feel.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you know, Joker and Spider-Verse and like Shang-Chi and like, you know, Suicide Squad, like they're very, all four of them are very, very, mm-hmm. very different movies. And I feel like they are trying nowadays, at least sometimes, and I appreciate that.
Yeah. Apparently Venom might be gay as well or something. I don't know. He was in a gay club.
Yes.
What's happening with that?
Yes. Yeah, he is. So there was a clip of him and he's in a club, and the interview was, someone asked Andy Serkis about it, and he was like, yeah, that's his coming out scene. And because he's always pitched Venom 2 as a love story between Eddie and Venom. And so he was like, that's his coming out scene.
Oh, wow.
I mean, didn't Venom, like, bind with Michelle Williams' character just so he can make out with Eddie?
Yeah.
Like, let's be honest.
So now he's canonically gay. Which
there
then. All for
can't blame him. Have you seen Tom Hardy? Like.
Exactly.
He always looks ill in Venom, though, so I don't know how I feel about that. He always looks like he's just been dragged for a hedge, so.
It's got a certain rugged quality to it, though.
He looks like Daniel Craig in the Bond films. Just wants to be there, but doesn't want to be there.
He's just fed up at this point.
Yeah.
If you're on YouTube, please subscribe and like the video. If you're on audio services, please remember to follow and maybe give us a review if that's a thing. I don't even know if the hell that works. I don't listen to audio podcasts. I'm Cameron. You can find me on Twitter at CamsOG, ohifilms.com, and ohifilms YouTube channel, where I do sort of like semi reviews with Jordy Steele. Oase, where can people find you?
You can find me on Twitter at oasisoase or on thefilmbite.com.
And Laura, where can the people find you?
On Twitter. Sorry. At Laura _Poitier or at Outtake Mag.
For all that good content.
all that sick content.
You can just, or you can just follow me instead, and any of the really good outtake content, I'll retweet it because I'll probably have written it.
Yeah.
Oh,
it's,
wow.
It's like, you know, a filter
through. Yeah, exactly.
Well, yeah.
So I'll second that.
thank you for coming on again. That was
it
was great to have you. And yeah, thank you so much for watching. We'll see you in next week for Aloha and a Rational Man.